Hello, everybody. I'm Lisa Burwell, your host of VSpeaks, Conversations with Heart and Soul. I'm also the editor-in-chief of the magazine V, as well as the founder, 16 years in the making. We're sitting in the Rep Theater in Seaside, near and dear to my heart as I moved here from New England 32 years ago, and I spent a lot of time in this place, in this space, and I have so many memories, deep-rooted memories here in Seaside. And as the magazine has grown and is distributed across the country, and I've had the great pleasure to meet so many fascinating people, the Rep is bringing you the Sock Jocelyn Trio tonight. There is going to be a documentary, and then Friday and Saturday, I have Jared and Joshua Thompson in the house here. They're welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
That was a long intro to get here, but here we are.
Thanks for having us. This is
You're
great.
Welcome. So I'm so excited. There is so much to talk about because you both have a storied career already and you're pretty young, both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it sometimes, but thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So to my right is Jared, and then to the other side of my right here is Joshua. So I want to start kind of at the beginning, which we talked about, which is you're from a musical family, you had told me, and I was wondering, so how did that work out? How did it start? And how did you both respectively pick up your instruments?
So I'll start, if that's cool. So Joshua and I have an older sister, and she wanted to play piano because her best friend was playing piano. And being her younger brothers, we wanted to do everything that our big sister was doing. So at the age of five, Josh and I took up piano lessons from a lady that lived across the street from us. And our parents have always been huge aficionados, I guess, of music. My mother has a beautiful singing voice. My father was really into, like, jazz music when he was a young man. And we just all naturally kind of took to it. Some things you're just adept at doing. Mm-hmm. and piano, excuse me, was one of them. Mm-hmm. And our parents said, hey, when you get started with this, you know, you're in kindergarten now. If you do this, you're going to see this through to the end of high school. And that wasn't a problem at all. We just really, really took to the instrument. Mm-hmm. And then as we got older, getting ready to go into middle school is when you have the kind of like instrument petting zoo, and then pick all the things that you want to pick. Yeah. So I chose saxophone for no intelligent reason at all. It was like, all right, saxophone's cool.
It's cool.
I want to try to be cool. So I played saxophone. It was like, that literally was it. Yeah. And it was just a thing that it was a toy to me. I just couldn't get enough of playing it. I just, all I wanted to do was just have my hands on that horn at all times. So that was my, you know, evolution from piano to saxophone.
And you played beautifully.
Oh, thank you so much.
Welcome.
I think that's like Jarrett was saying, is we just really enjoyed it. And I think when you're a kid, there's that small window of time that you are given the freedom and the grace to be curious, to learn, explore, and discover things. And I think when you get a little bit older and start school, everything starts to become very yes, no, right, wrong, get the equation right, and we lose that sense of discovery. Mm-hmm. And what's been really nice, like Jared said, we started piano at five. I picked up trumpet at 10. So at every stage, we've had moments where we get to reinvigorate and renew that sense of discovery and that sense of wonder and curiosity. And that's just kind of what it was. That was our thing. And we all like to do things that we're pretty good at. They're fun. I don't know how many people enjoy doing things they're not good at. I don't. Right. And it's just been a lifelong love affair. Mm-hmm. And it's just something that is so inextricably intertwined, and it makes us who we are. I joke sometimes when I tell people that I don't really have a life outside of music, and that's true, but that's my choice. And I'm glad I've made that choice. Mm-hmm. So it's been fun. Yeah. And I'm excited to see what happens in the next several years, but also try to remember to just focus on today, maybe worry about tomorrow a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it does make it fun. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more fun.
Do you play together a lot? Is this a rarity?
It is becoming a little bit less of a rarity. We're still like in the testing phase of this right now. And luckily it's gone famously. We figured out where our paths line up. The biggest key to that, I mean, we're siblings. Mm-hmm. Regardless of what we do in music, we have a relationship outside of music. And so we have a relationship as brothers that we want to keep intact and keep healthy. So a lot of times the chemistry has to work because we have to know who's in charge, mm-hmm. who's mm-hmm. in what lane, and your job is not to cross that lane. There'd be a gig that I have where if I'm the one that's running the show, Josh has to take a seat back and just do what I tell him to do. Now, when Joshua has one, which he has, there may be certain things that I want to suggest or direct. And I'm just like, hey, Jared, that's not what you're here for. Like, this is Joshua's. Let him do that. And then things work out perfectly because everyone knows their role and what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's respectful, and that's the only way it's going to work. Whoever has the gig and is running the gig has to run the gig, right?
Now, backstage, there may be some words.
Right. And usually it is, but I'm like, I need for you to play the music and take this money. That is it. That is all.
It's been fun to do it. Like, people have wanted to see us on stage together for so long and would always ask, how come you don't do it? When you know that something isn't right, to do yet, you don't force it. And so this has been years of us figuring out, us being comfortable in our own creative skins to be able to allow this to happen organically the way that it's supposed to, which is why we're able to start, you know, touring together now, which is a lot of fun.
So who's running this gig?
Me. I'm older and I'm in charge. So that's how we're doing it today.
All right. So tell our listeners where you came up with the name Sock Joplin Trio.
Yes. So Sock Joplin is my stage name. So what I do as a classical pianist is I exclusively research and perform classical music that was written by composers of African descent. Growing up, I loved playing the Mozart and Beethoven and Brahms and Ravel. I loved it. But, you know, I kind of look around and I'm like, why is it that I'm not hearing or I have not received music that's written by Black composers? And it almost makes you think, we do this, right? And the reality is, I mean, that repertoire goes back a good 5 or 6 centuries. And then when you start to uncover, well, why isn't it played? Yeah. Look at your larger social structures and systems of disenfranchisement, discrimination, and exclusion. And so as an adult, I was like, well, now is your turn. And you have the responsibility to provide for other people what you did not have growing up. And so that's what I do. So I blend this whole thing of Scott Joplin, who we all know from Ragtime, but he was an aspiring operatic composer. Mm-hmm. He's got one of them that's surviving, but he wrote two. And I never play with my shoes on. I always have socks. So I always make sure that they're real colorful and fun, just to add personality and a little bit of levity to what I do. And I used to be called the Barefoot Beethoven. And then a good friend of mine from childhood was like, nah, man, like, I'm going to start calling you Sock Joplin. I was like, yeah, I'm going to start calling me Sock Joplin, too. And so it's this beautiful, like, mix of personality, a little bit of a reference, if you pick up on it, to kind of figure it out, and a reminder for myself to be like, you know, this is fun. And you can have personality and levity, and you don't have to be so serious and striving for perfection so much. I still do. But every now and then, I look at my feet and I remind myself, like, dude, this is fun.
So did you play barefoot and then put socks on, or was it always socks?
It was always just socks. Okay, I'm not playing barefoot on the piano. I don't know. I don't know where the pedals have been. I'm not touching that. But yeah, so it's just fun. And so in lieu of flowers to shows, people bring socks. And I don't think I've bought a pair of socks in about the last, what, 4 or 5 years? And it's just fun. Everyone has to have a little gimmick.
Yeah.
As long as the gimmick makes sense.
Exactly.
And so you got the Sock Joplin Trio.
Exactly. So we're missing one member of your trio. So I can't wait to meet her. And we talked a little bit about that from your documentary. Mm. She's got some vocal chops.
She got pipes.
She's pipes for days. Amazing. And her name is Siren Simone.
That is correct.
And how did you all meet up? And how long have the three of you been playing? I guess the same amount of time that you've been part of the trio,
If we look at anything growing up, music or not, it's been like this since kindergarten. I was like, how did you get to know so-and-so? Jared's always the one out of the twins who makes the friends.
Okay.
It's not true.
It is so true.
You're head of publicity.
He is. He's my marketing manager. Like, everyone's like, oh, I know Jared. I'm like, well, you can get to know me too. But Jared makes my friends for me. And so it's one of those things where I'm like, a friend of Jared, 9 times out of 10, is going to be a friend of mine. And so we're all just like friends, just buddies. and knew that we all had these like creative artistic things. And so it was just hanging out at each other's houses. And sometimes we'd have little shows and just put stuff together, and really hearing her voice, loving it, love hanging out with her and being like, so Siren, we should kind of work together. And we had to push her a little bit because she didn't think that she was really as good as she is.
Oh, I think Josh and I first, I mean, she's just fun to hang out with anyway.
Yeah.
Like, wonderful personality, very intelligent, goofy, and it's just, it's fun. Like, we like quirky people. My husband and I would always do, it happened to be July 4th about 7 years ago, we would do port sessions. Like, all of our friends are musicians. So we were just like, hey, we'll grill. Y'all just bring your horns over and let's just, and for 7 hours, it was just folks as they would randomly come in. Josh was playing piano. I had a friend bring his upright bass over. A friend was playing guitar. Keyboard player that lived around the corner came around. And next thing we knew, we've got like 60 people up on our front porch. And it's a port session.
Wow.
And it's dusk, so it's not quite dark yet. And Ashley decides she wants to sing something. And she sings Prince's How Come You Don't Call Me No More. And burned it down. I was just like, why are you not doing anything? It's like, oh, you know, I just kind of do my little singing thing. I was like, no, this has to stop. Like, you're, and so literally from that point, Josh and I don't want to say coach because she's a capable woman all on her own. But in certain avenues, we were coaching her to say, you need to put yourself here. You need to be doing this. You need to be doing that. And just left it up for her to decide if that's what she wanted to do. And just to watch her trajectory in such a short amount of time is absolutely incredible.
It's been awesome.
She's just magnetic. She has star quality. And not only want to say potential, she has it.
Yes.
It's insane.
Yeah. The world just needs to...
to see it.
To see it.
Yeah.
And to know it and all of that. So tonight, in the rep, you are going to be showing the film. And whose idea was it to bring that film to market?
It was a bit of both of ours. I've been really, really fortunate over the last several years to complete several residencies around the country where sometimes you're doing performances, you're doing research, lectures, and teaching, and a lot of times you're doing all of those things all at once. I love to perform. It's a lot of fun. But there's always that moment when you get done, whether you've sold out a show or not, standing ovations, and then 2 days later you sit back and reflect, and like, man, I'm never getting that moment back. It's not going to happen. How important it really is to not just do your best, but to archive it so it lives beyond the performance stage, because that is your teaching tool. That's your resource kit into which you can travel elsewhere. So we both have projects, major projects that we've done where we were able to film them. And we saw this as a wonderful opportunity to kind of give a precursor to what we do for these shows this weekend. But those shows are just really kind of the tip of the iceberg behind our means, motivation, and inspiration behind what we do. And it really is just kind of taking trajectories and stories from our own lived experience and how we put that into our art and our creation. And so what you get is Jared's documentary film, 38th and Postmodernism, and then you get mine, which is Black Keys, The Evolution of the Black Classical Arts. So can performing artists be filmmakers? Yes. Can filmmakers be performing artists? Yes. All of these things are feedback loops into one another to help broaden the scope and understanding from artist to audience. And so we're all having this very communal experience that lives beyond any performance.
I think it's great to do like the prep in advance for the shows on Friday and Saturday. And the name of that is Performance as
Preservation. Yes.
And then will your documentary be shown tonight as well?
Yes. They're, they're going to be shown 38th of Postmodernism.
Yeah, that was it. And your documentary, was that part of the Porch Band? Because you had a lot of different people gigging with there, and they were, that was good. Is that your band?
Yes, that's my premium blend. So
okay, that's a good band.
Thank you so much. What we did was actually expand the band. So typically it's a quintet. And we turned it into an octet arranged by the flute player, Amanda Gardier. She used to live in Indianapolis. She now plays in the Army band, and she lives in Baltimore with her husband, who's also a musician. Really great friends of ours. It was fun. Most of those people in that documentary have been on my porch. You know, is just, not only is it the artistic and creative community in Indianapolis, But again, these are people that we just hang out with. We just share commonalities with. So it was, we filmed that during COVID. I want to say it was mid to end of June was when we started filming. We got the call to come up with the project a week before that. Really? And I was on a roll. For one, I was like,
you didn't have anything else to do.
Yeah, I was like, I got to get out of the house. Like, it was a good excuse to go see friends that you miss.
So it was like 4 months after we were shuttered.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. And it was just a really, like I said, it was a great way to see people that I like and admire, but also just to hear what they're saying. I mean, we know what we're saying to ourselves and to our spouses and things, but when you're not able to see people and stuff like, hey, am I tripping? Am I, you know, am I the only one that feels this way? So it was just nice to hear and not try to coerce anybody, just to organically have them talk about what it is that they're experiencing and how they're internalizing it.
It was very moving, as I told you before we went on air. There's something about, you know, jazz that just like takes you away and you don't even realize it, but your brain is moving elsewhere. And then you come back and go, oh, I'm listening to music, because you think a lot about it and you feel. And, you know, you playing the sax, I mean, you're like one with that instrument too. Like there's no like delineation.
Thank you.
Very little. And just the band was like super, super great. And so I'm totally like digging the music, and I love jazz, and I'm like, why isn't there more jazz where I live? If I lived in a city, I could go hear more jazz. Why do I live here?
Thank you. The jazz musicians need to hear that more often. Okay. Like, oh, thank you for that.
And then, you know, some of the people that you have on about what was happening, and so I'm just going to share a teeny bit about what happened to me in the pandemic.
Sure.
You know, I'm like the oldest of six from an Irish Catholic family in Boston, and like, I'm tough. I can weather storms. I have a lot of faith in God, and all that put together makes me a person that can stand my ground. And a lot of people are falling apart around me, as so many were during the pandemic, especially at that period of time that you're talking about right now. And all I had to do was figure out how to keep the company open, how to make money. Am I going down? Is the pandemic going to take me down after I've been doing this for so long? Like, that would be like the saddest thing for the pandemic to take me down. So I had a lot of fight in me, and I didn't realize that it was delayed nervousness or a delayed reaction until about 6 months ago. And I was feeling very weird and odd and not like my very strong self. And I'm like, what is going on with me? And then I was analyzing it, and I'm like, oh, I think this is post-pandemic grief that I didn't deal with when a lot of other people were dealing with it. And I really kind of like got the memo on that about a month or two ago. So then when your people are talking and they're talking about what they were going through back then when it was very raw, I wasn't dealing with it that then. Mm-hmm. I was surviving. Mm-hmm. And I was just staying the course and trying to figure out like what just happened, because it was a world event unlike any other, and a lot of people that don't talk about it that much probably feel like I do. There's a lot of delayed reaction on that.
Yeah.
But then it brought me back to having to remember things that I clearly wasn't dealing with back then, which is what was going on with the uproar in the cities. And we didn't have that here. So it was, we were isolated from that to a degree, but obviously, you know, we all feel the same thing, and we could see things on TV, but we weren't there in the thick of it. Mm-hmm. And so just, and you weren't showing anything that had happened, but you were listening, but you, I already knew all the optics of what was going on. So I paused deeply last night when I was watching it going, wow, that was really bad. And you know, you can't think about it until it, is you're reminded of that and what it meant to many people and what it, and how hard it was on some groups than it wasn't on other groups, that we all were in it together to some degree, but not exactly the same exact things were going on. And so the George Floyd thing, which was horrific to me watching that, horrific, you know. And so it made me do a Google search on what happened to those police officers, because I hadn't figured that out yet, or it wasn't on my radar, but it was last night. And then I was pleased, and I wanted to ask you if you were pleased that that police officer is in jail for 20 years or what? Like, is it not even good enough? Like, what about that?
That's interesting.
I think when things like that happen, how do you quantify justice? How do you quantify restitution and restoration?
Is there any? Yeah.
Is that a part of?
Yeah.
It is, but we still don't have justice and restoration for a handful of centuries at this point.
Yes. Yeah.
What I love about Jared's documentary and my film as well, because mine actually started out as a solo piano show called Black Keys and toured, and the grander vision was what you see now.
Yeah.
Very much like you in survival mode during
that time,
the pandemic.
That was then, yeah.
We didn't take any time to, you're processing, but we're purging at the same time. And I think this is a beautiful thing that artists have at their disposal. Mm-hmm. When things seem wildly chaotic, when things seem completely confusing, and you have a mix between complete defeat, rage, unbelievable sadness, you have a thing that you can go to to purge that.
Mm-hmm.
And what comes out of that is something that is really, really beautiful or has the potential to be and very poignant. And so I think for me, no, that's not okay. That's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
That is not justice.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, it doesn't matter for me what justice looks like. I found what justice and resolution look like for me. And to be able to put it on a screen and share with other people is what justice and restitution looks like from my vantage point.
It's an interesting thing because it's, I mean, we have had this conversation collectively, individually. But my biggest question, I was like, okay, I think he got some semblance of justice just because no one had the choice but to look away.
Yeah.
And so, because all eyes were on it and everyone was seeing the same thing, then something, quote unquote, had to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Joshua and I were 10 years old watching Rodney King get his, getting the brakes beat off of him.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen this so many times. Like, we're young black men.
Yeah.
We were raised by black parents. We have a black father that is, how do you tell your young children about these things that are out in this world without completely destroying them as children?
Yeah.
But you need to do it so it could potentially save their lives as they go on their own journey. These are a lot of things to try to wrestle with and then try to be optimistic and try to blah, 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 and try to do this. And it's just like, I need everything to stop, you know?
Right.
So
right.
I think to Josh's point, what does justice look like? No, it's not enough because this was a overcorrection for centuries of a lack of justice. And we're still there today.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that being said, it's like, okay, today's Wednesday.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, like, this is what it is to be black in America.
Yeah.
It's happened since George Floyd. You know, everyone's looking for this flashpoint, and now things will change. I'm like, no, and one even 2 weeks later before we're hearing out Breonna Taylor, before we're hearing about, you know, all these other names. And so it's a checklist. And you have to, again, I go back to this is the need and the power of art and artist and artistry. It's not here to save the world. It's here to save your own humanity so you can be a reflection of what being a human is for other people. That's all you can do.
What's that show where this kid's talking to his grandfather and he's super upset? Well, granddad, what do I do when all of this is happening? And what do I do? And the grandfather just simply says, you do what you can. And it sounds so simple and it sounds so like that's not enough. And it's like, no, it isn't.
That's
you
enough.
Do what you can.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as I said, it comes out in these documentaries. It comes out in these things. And does it solve the problem? No.
Mm-hmm.
Does it do something? I didn't know that you watched the documentary yesterday. You know what I mean? So that's efficacy.
Yeah, it is. And I don't know what to say. I feel so horrible and sad for the reality of that. And your documentary was different in its approach. And it was quiet confidence, but very confident.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very effective. So is that on any streaming platforms?
It lives on YouTube.
Okay.
Because essentially what that was Indie Jazz Fest, was not able to have people in attendance. So the Indianapolis Jazz Foundation commissioned four different bands in the city to come up with a project, like literally anything they wanted to do. And my guitar player, he's also the producer of the documentary, Ryan Taylor, was like, we should do a documentary. And so we're kind of talking about ideas and that's how that came about. And literally the goal that we had both set out with everything going on, it was like, our job is not to persuade anyone any one direction. If we do this the right way, the music and the commentary is going to let people come to their own conclusion that they want. We don't need to beat anyone over the head. Because again, the dual action of this documentary was also, hey, there's no Jazz Fest, so we have to give the public some semblance of Jazz Fest. You don't want to like depress anybody, but
you can't.
I got a platform.
Like this
I have a platform, and I'm going to use it. It was just a fun way to, we affectionately called it a docu-concert.
it was really powerful and beautiful. And, you know, the music was speaking for itself. And the music, like I said, is so moody, so soulful, and it takes you away. But then it's sad. The instrument is sad sounding. You know what I mean? And that's very powerful when you added those very well-spoken people that you had in there. And it was very authentic, but it was also like, I can't think of a better way to describe it, like authentic, but quiet confidence. Like, I'm not going to beat you over the head with this. This has been done before, clearly hasn't worked.
Right.
Let's, you know, I wouldn't call it that you had a resignation about it either. It wasn't like, oh, well, like I'm hopeless, and it wasn't that either, you know? And that was pretty powerful.
It was stating, here's what it is.
Yeah.
And here's where we are.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we end it with discussing some kind of levity. There is optimism.
Yeah. Yeah.
There,
you know, I heard that.
And the music reflected that as well. And I think that's what we wanted everyone to walk away with. Because to be honest, some of the demographic of jazz listeners in Indianapolis don't have the life experience in the situations that we do.
Yeah.
So it may not be on their minds that way. This put it in a package that I hate to say that it's palatable for them, because it makes it sound like it's like trying to cater them. That wasn't it at all. It was just like, look, you can pay attention to this or not, but don't say that it wasn't brought to you in a way that you know that you can understand it. And I think that was just kind of the universal intent that we had. I mean, even the reference of the title 38th and Postmodernism in Indianapolis, 38th and Post Road is not a part of town
that's what I was
you want to
thinking
be
yeah.
on.
Mm-hmm.
38th and anything.
38th and anything. Well,
south of 38th.
You know, the east,
is a different
east side
of the city.
The far east side of Indianapolis has had problems for years.
Yeah.
But we don't throw those people away.
Yeah.
The city may want to, but there's brilliant artists out there.
Yeah.
There are brilliant cooks and just like culture that is there.
Mm-hmm.
But the circumstances, which are not always their fault of why they're there. The city let them down.
Yeah.
The police department let them down. Department of Public Works let them down.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they are still there. They're still resilient. And the east side going east side.
You know,
that's just what it is.
Right.
So 38th and Post, you take an area that when you say that, most people in Indianapolis, they're going to give you a look because they know what that is.
Yeah.
And this documentary was like, well, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
All of these people in this documentary either are on that side of town, have friends or family on that side of town, but y'all love them so much. So let's start retraining ourselves about what we think about a certain side of town just because you hear two cross streets.
Right.
You know?
We'll get off this in a minute if you want to. Yeah. I mean, I think it's really important to say and to tell, you know, people about what you're doing too, because it's all part of it. But do you have hope? In lieu of what looks like in the last week has been going on? I mean, like, it's so monumentally different.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, what your opinion... I don't know what my opinion is exactly, because it's so altered.
Right.
In a short period of time.
We all have the ability to hold two seemingly competing emotions and thoughts in our head, bodies, and brains at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
We're allowed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do that. I think critical people do that.
Right.
I don't know if optimism is a word I would use, but a more deep commitment to what I do Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm so grateful to be here this week. Mm-hmm. We had a couple shows last week. We got a couple more coming up through the next several months. And it is the parallels between my life during the pandemic in 2020 and what is coming up ahead are so similar. Oh. And I go back to, what did you do when your back was against the wall and you didn't know what to do? Mm-hmm. You do what you can. Mm-hmm. And you do what you know how to do.
Right. Which is what you said your grandfather said? Or was
our dad
it your
said
dad?
Yeah. Yeah,
our dad. Okay. It was a show also that is just,
But I'm committed. Mm. You know, and I empathize as much as I'm able to with other folks who, last week, they just did not have a good week. Mm-hmm. And they're not having a good week this week either, right? Because they have natural things that they're a little concerned about for one reason or the other, right? Mm-hmm. My job, my career, what I feel really, really is necessary is, Joshua, you have opportunities to literally show people what to do. And I can't do that to the best of my abilities if I'm absorbing everyone's chaos, to which they have a right to. And I think they need to have it. But I'm not there. Because I've been there before, and I'm like, ah, I remember what I did last time. And it paid off in dividends. I'm still reaping the benefits from what I did. So imagine that when people are looking for leaders, artists, something. I'm the something. And I have to go do it. And so, yes, I'm really, really motivated, deeper committed to what I do, because I know it's so important for myself, for other people, and it becomes that catalyst that kind of sparks other folks to figure out what it is that they do to do it without apology, 10 toes down, with your full chest out.
Yeah, well, we're lucky. We're lucky that you're here.
Thank you.
Cannot wait to hear these performances.
No, you cannot. And I tell you, listen, it's what you want. It is what you want.
Yeah, we're real lucky. Random kind of crazy question for each of you, the same question. In your career, music career, what was the absolute highlight for both of you individually that you went, no way, I cannot believe I'm doing this?
Wow. Jared has like what 15 years to like backtrack and figure out. So while you think, I think I'll.
It's like me ordering at a restaurant. Like talk slow. I know.
Okay. I don't know if there is one.
Okay.
I mean, there's highlights everywhere. That I have a career doing this. I've wanted to do this ever since I was a little kid. I remember I was a little kid. I would watch like Bugs Bunny and Tom and Jerry were my thing. I loved it, and the music behind it got me. I was like, I don't know what that is. I remember going to my daddy. I'm like, Daddy, I want to play for cartoons. And I'm not playing for cartoons, but I'm like, well, I don't know. Life is a cartoon. So maybe I'm doing like the life version of, I don't know. But the fact that I just have a career, because there was a period of time where I wouldn't play for anybody publicly. I'm like, I'm not good enough, so I'm not going to. And then a lot of pushing and shoving from friends where they're just like, go do it and see what happens. So that's awesome. And everything that has happened for the most part afterwards, whether it's residencies or grants or coming up with shows that sell out 6 weeks before the curtain even goes up and winning awards for it, all of that is just like, wow. And I don't take the time to sit back and look at the wow very much, because I'm always like, okay, now what's next? Because I don't like to rest on my laurels. I'm not real big on ego. I feel like what I do is for the greater good. And you can't be the best for the greater good if you're so focused on patting yourself on the back. So sometimes I do need to remind myself that you work hard and you're allowed to feel good about what you do. You're allowed to do that.
Definitely. So, yeah. Be proud.
I think mine... It's weird. I mean, I've had a lot of experiences on stages, and I'm like, man, this is absolutely incredible. This is dope. And other scenarios that I didn't think I would have been, quote unquote, good enough to be in that position. But there's one, and it's not glamorous or sexy at all, but there's one that has just always stuck with me, and it literally is one of the most significant turning points in the way that I think about my craft. There was a gentleman, we were so lucky to have him in Indianapolis, the late Melvin Ryan. Now, Melvin Ryan was the B3 organ player for Wes Montgomery. Now, you go anywhere in the world and you mention Melvin Ryan, and they're like, oh, man, we got to meet and play with him all the time.
Wow.
You know, he was an elder. He was one of the last great Indiana Avenue musicians. And at the club in Indianapolis, the large jazz club, is called the Jazz Kitchen. Monday nights, they would have jazz jams, and you can come and bring in your horn and practice and try it out. Well, Melvin was the organ player. And I would go in each week, and I played the same tune. It was You Don't Know What Love Is. And after the second week of me doing that, anytime I walked into the room, Melvin would get up from the organ. Like, this dude was not going to play with me. Like, so I'm in there, and it would really rattled me at first. Wow. And he'd see me, he'd get up and go to the bar. When I was done playing, then he'd come back and play again. It bothered me, and I was like, whatever, Melvin's being Melvin. I'm going to keep playing it.
Mm-hmm.
I played the same tune 8 weeks in a row. That's what you do. You go practice. You practice with, you know, real intent. 1 week, I go in there, and I'm just expecting Melvin to get his narrow behind up and go sit at the bar with the beer like he normally does. I'm playing, and I can hear. I was like, there's an organ playing. Melvin's at the end. I'm like, don't freak out. Just keep playing. This was 8 weeks. I get done with my solo. Melvin's just grinning, and as I walk past him, he grabs my elbow. He goes, CMF, that's all you had to do. And I'm like, I don't know what I did any different than last week. But it was just, it's that tough love. He was of that generation. Like, they're not going to pat you on the back for doing what you're supposed to know how to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just from that song. I love that song.
Mm.
And I love that song even more because Melvin was like, look, you've got it in you, kid, but I'm not going to just give it to you. And just out of nowhere, he liked what he was hearing, and he stayed on that stage and played. And I was like, all right, I'm not playing that song for a while, and I'm not sitting in it for a little while either. Yeah. I just need to revel in that moment. But it was really about a feeling that I wasn't tapping into, or just like a method that I wasn't tapping into. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, you got to – if you're not doing it, you're not doing it, and don't expect people to, like, say, hey, that was great, if it wasn't great. Mm. It was just the honesty, it's the sincerity from a legend like him that
amazing.
Will always stick with me.
That's awesome.
It was embarrassing, but it was great.
That's amazing.
The funny thing about that, Jared's being very nice about Melvin. You either love Melvin or you cannot stand his ass.
Melvin,
that's
was
just how
else.
He was. The funniest part of it was, you know, Jared's explaining all this, and then since Melvin is actually playing with him, like, the dig just keeps coming. He's like, what's your name? And Jared goes, my name is Jared. And Melvin goes, you're never going to make it with a name like that.
Oh,
I'm
going
to call you Skip.
So
he just completely changes his name.
Yep.
And that's just how, you know, that generation just was. And it's just kind of funny because Jared worked really, really hard on so much. And, you know, you get to something and you feel like you master it. Mm-hmm. And then they just raise the bar again. And you're like, ugh. And every time Jared would go back to the mat. Mm-hmm. And take that slow, steady climb up to that next level. So it's kind of, those stories crack me up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they're funny because I know how bad they hurt Jared's feelings. And then he finally gets
Skip
it.
Skip would not have been a good
name. It never stuck. I mean, my bandmates every now and again call me Skip.
Okay.
It's hilarious just out of joke. But no, it was, thank you, Melvin Ryan. That man was something else, man. He really
That's
was.
Good. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
You summited with him for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Tell us what we're going to be hearing on Friday and Saturday night.
Man, it's going to be a lot of fun. Think of it part stand-up comedy meets upbeat, high-tempo music that has a message that you really have to, like, marinate on. Very much like your experience with watching, you know, the documentary where on the way home, you're going to be like, oh, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
We're telling a story, right?
Mm-hmm.
All three of us have our own picks and pans for what we like in music.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all been so fortunate to go down this journey together. And on the journey, you have different stops, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to take a couple stops. And then we're going to show you how our influences all converge and been like, y'all, we're just people. Mm-hmm. It's just music. It's all universal. And again, it's like, let's just be human and just have fun. Mm-hmm. I don't do recitals. Mm-hmm. I've played enough of them. Mm-hmm. I don't care how good you are. They're all boring, right? It's all about personality. Like, classical music can be seen as like serious music and super heavy. No, you just bring the personality and the story to it. Jazz is the same thing. What Siren brings is the same as well. And when you see people on stage enjoying what they're doing mm-hmm. and having fun, that's what I want. I'm hoping that the audience is drink in hand, up on their feet, mm-hmm. and just there's no wall between mm-hmm. the stage mm-hmm. and the seat.
Amazing.
We all just get to have this fun experience, and the music is mm-hmm. is really, really good.
Yeah. I cannot wait.
It's the audience involvement that I love. I don't do quiet shows. Uh-huh. If somebody isn't shouting at some point and somewhere, I'm like, y'all can go home
right.
because we're not doing this ivory tower kind of thing because uh-huh. that's not what this is.
Right,
like
right.
to me, the best jazz records are where you can hear that are recorded live. You
yes.
can hear the audience
mm-hmm.
responding to what's going on at any given point in time. Like that's a moment. Mm-hmm. That is the separation between the audience and the performer is completely eliminated. Mm-hmm. That's what you want. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we take our job seriously, but not that seriously.
Right, right. So, Joshua, you were here last year with the Artist in Residency. Did mm-hmm. you perform in this spot?
In this very okay. space, I want to say it was January 16th, 2024,
right.
and sold it out.
Uh-huh.
Sold it out.
Awesome.
Oh, my God, it was fun. It was so much fun.
I heard
fun.
So many good things about it.
Thank you.
Sadly, I was not able to attend, but I mean, people are still talking about it.
Well, good. We're going to give them something else to talk about. Okay. I think there was, I had such a wonderful time getting to know the community of Seaside.
Mm-hmm.
I mean that completely. And the best way to do it is to be out in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing the same thing when we're here, hence mm-hmm. the film screening. We have mm-hmm. a wonderful opportunity to teach some fifth and eighth graders on Friday with mm-hmm. some music workshops.
Yeah, that's amazing.
We have the shows and the meet and greets. And man, this is one of the most culturally curious places mm-hmm. I have been.
Mm-hmm.
And the people at the Rep go above and beyond to make sure that they're bringing in very, very high quality talent and treating them well.
Right.
And what they get in return is amazing.
Right.
I was looking through the entire program and the season, and I'm so excited because the next weekend, you all get Black Bach. And he and I are friends on Instagram because our manager was like, Joshua, you've got to know him. And so he and I have been chit-chatting yeah. for like mm-hmm. months. He's incredible. Like, mm-hmm. you all have, like, mm-hmm. the next 3 weeks
mm-hmm.
are foolish.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like,
go
how cool Brooke is that?
Statler, the
yeah.
executive director of the Rep, who has been here doing his thing for 14 years and doing an amazing job.
Love Brooke.
Thank you,
Love
Brooke.
Aubrey. They're awesome.
And Aubrey.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, so good.
They're awesome.
So V Magazine had this issue last month, had the pleasure of featuring you all in the lineup. And I love that you're in the magazine and then, you know, getting to meet you. And actually, like, when you think about making a magazine and you're telling someone's story on the printed pages, and then you get to meet them in person, like we are right now, like I get to meet you and we get to talk. That literally is what great storytelling is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And then also cultivating relationships, because over the years, we don't just like write about somebody and then like we don't talk to them again. Like, we move kind of together and then we bump into each other or different things happen and you're forming these relationships that last a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important thing to me, or one of the most satisfying things to me that I've had on this journey, is to be able to meet and know so many mm-hmm. different people. And it's been a great gift for me to be able to share stories that otherwise a lot of media outlets don't share.
Right.
They just don't, you know, mm-hmm. this is a very old fashioned way of, you know, talking about a lot of different topics. Right. And I find media, traditional media, legacy media that they're calling it right now, just like everyone is in a box.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we're not in a box. I hate boxes. Well, any tips or inspirational words for any musicians that to do their thing? I always like wrapping up a podcast with nuggets of wisdom or inspiration for people that might be struggling. I mean,
yeah.
you know, you've both talked about a little bit about what we all go through from time to time, which is, you know, imposter syndrome, you're not good enough. And then, you know, you get to a point, you're like, well, I think I am, not ego wise, but like I've been doing it for like 1,000 years. So I think I know what I'm doing, but like for people that aren't there yet,
you just play to your strengths, you know, do what you do in the way that you do it and not so much focusing on how like a mentor or someone that you look up to, like that works for them. Figure out what it is that works for you. And that's going to take some time, but like that is ultimately what your individual thumbprint is going to be. And make sure that you're having fun with it. The moment it turns too much into a job, it loses its innate allure to you. So yeah, just be you in the way that you are you. And yeah, and be good with it.
Yeah, that's good. Good advice.
Consistency, I think, is key with everything. Anyone can like hit the stars on any given day, but how many actually make that trip every day, right? So just be consistent with what you're doing. And I've always been very much into like visions. Everyone can have an idea. The difference between an artist and regular people is people have ideas, artists have visions. If you can see it and you feel it and it doesn't go away, that's what you're supposed to do. I'm fortunate where I can only see so much of mine, because if I saw all of it, I don't think I'd work as hard. But I'm like, okay, you can see what's in front of you and you keep walking towards it. Guess what? You can see even more and even more. So if it's a vision, you'll know it, you'll feel it, and you follow it. And does it matter if anyone likes it or if you think, no. And when it's one of those things that's just that strong, it never goes wrong. And it always goes way better than you thought it was going to. And yeah, that would be my thing.
Yeah, awesome. I neglected to say in your documentary how much I loved your piano playing as well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so thrilled.
I needed to hear that. Thank you, because there's so many times where I'm playing something and I know how I had a teacher who say, Joshua, play it the way you want to hear it. And I get so into that. And when it doesn't go the way I want it to, internally, I pout so bad. And I'm learning how to, like, Joshua, let it go. And learning how not to take the joy away from people. When people say, oh, that piece was so great. I'm like, yeah, but I messed up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I just ruined that awesome moment for them. Yeah. Let them have it. And that's the other ticket. If you play repertoire that people don't know, don't nobody know if you mess up.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's the goal, but
don't know.
They don't know what they're listening to. So let them have it. Let them have their joy. Don't take it away from them.
Wow. Well, it's been my pleasure. This meeting you and great. Talking with you both. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we didn't argue.
Good. This is good for you.
Turning out to
you
be
can
a
have
good
an argument after.
Yeah, we will.
Oh, wow. Such a treat. Thank you, Brooke and the rep at Seaside, for letting us use the space, and to our great camera crew, Aloha Bora Media Studios, and Gina for being here as well. Makes me feel good. And for you all being here, too. Hope you enjoyed it. Support these guys big time. Thank you. Bye-bye.